Welcome to Wyoming Stories. I'm Micah Schweitzer. This podcast brings you stories about Wyomingites in their own words. Some were recorded by StoryCorps, a project that records conversations between loved ones, and others were recorded as part of our own Wyoming Stories project. Veterans Day was this month, so today we'll hear from two former members of the military. First, veteran Ted Gostis tells his wife, Jody Gostis, about being taken as a prisoner of war in the Vietnam War and his years in solitary confinement. Gostis remained a POW for 5 years, 5 months, and 15 days. Of those captured in northern Vietnam, he was one of only four POWs to stay in solitary confinement for more than 4 years.
Solitary confinement is an awesome experience because you don't know what's going to happen next first, and my cell was only about 7 feet high by 4 feet wide, and I had a blanket and a mosquito net and a pair of old stocks that they used to, like the medieval stocks. You could lift them up and put a person's feet in them, clasp it down, and then lock it. And I had a spoon, and I was in very dire straits all most of the time because I couldn't correspond with anybody. So I was completely alone. So I tried to think of things to keep my sanity, stories, anything I could think of. I started to sing to myself, make up songs, do anything I could, but it always kept slipping away like sliding down a mountainside. And I knew I was going insane, and I didn't want to. I didn't want to go insane at all. Nobody wants to go insane. But it was slipping away from me. And every time I'd think of something, I'd think of taking my wife, at that time my first wife, to a flower store, buying her a bouquet of flowers, and then walking down the street. And then 3 months later, I'd try to reconstruct that story, and I'd be throwing her through the window and eating the flowers and all kinds of bizarre things. So I knew I was losing it. And eventually, I actually, through psychological torture combined with physical torture, went completely insane, and it took a long time to get me back to sanity.
I have a very special request, and that is for you to tell the story, if you can, of your gold tooth.
When I went to Greece with my father, he was aware that I was going to go to the Greek-American school there. My mother had ordered him to do that, leave me there so I could learn the Greek language. But he was kind of a penny pincher, and every time we'd go to a dentist, the dentist would say he wanted 200 drachmas or 500 drachmas. I had two front teeth that were supposed to be made into partials because they were missing. I had fallen and broken both of them as younger. And so he kept taking me to a doctor that he felt met his budget. When we got down to 40 drachmas, the doctor said, I have no Novocaine, but I can do the job. And he started in, and I screamed so loud I ran out of the office. Then I ran back to my father, grabbed the airplane tickets, and went by myself to Swiss Air and flew home. And my mother was furious. She said, you were supposed to stay in Greece. I said, I'm not going to stay with him. The doctor had almost finished his work, in Greece, that is. And what he had done was had the jeweler come up from the street to make gold fittings to my two front teeth to clasp them into my mouth. And I forgot all about them. The communists didn't see him. They didn't care about that, but they took everything else from me, ring, watch, billfold, everything I had. And I had nothing that was familiar to me. So being in solitary confinement for 4.5 years, one of only four prisoners who were in solitary confinement for more than 4 years, I started to lose my mind, and I knew I was going insane. And one day I was sitting in my cell, and I looked at my hands. I had clasped them in front of me, and all of a sudden I saw gold, and I thought, somebody up there loves me. They're sending me gold to bribe a guard to let me go or something. And I looked down and I found out that my due to malnutrition. Mouth had shrunk and the teeth had fallen out. Those two little gold backings had fallen out. I picked them up and it said Eptadromo, seven-something street, Athens, Greece. And that brought me back to reality for a time, that I knew I had an identity and that these teeth were indicative of that. And I used them very carefully because the guards would check to see everything that was in the prisoner's cell. And I used to cut my fingernails with the edge of the gold teeth partial that had fallen out. And the guards were always wondering when they came in to cut my fingernails, which sometimes would go below the quick, how I had my nails always so nice. So they'd grab my hand and they'd see that it'd been cut and they'd leave. But then one day they discovered that I had this clasp and they took it from me.
That was Ted Gostis talking to his wife, Jody. The piece was produced by Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhoroff with interviews recorded at StoryCorps. We're now going to hear from Jason Williams, an Iraq War veteran from Lander. In 2004, he was part of the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit sent to Najaf.
We were part of the 11th MEU, the Marine Expeditionary Unit. We offloaded in Kuwait, and then we flew into Iraq. The overall mission was that a guy by the name of Muttad al-Sadr raised a militia and was causing a lot of problems in Najaf. And so they had us go in there and start clearing it out. I remember we were going into the city, and I ended up jumping out of the back end of the 7-ton and just posting security, just checking out the surrounding areas, making sure that nobody was going to try to ambush us or anything. And a kid that couldn't have been more than 8 years old came up. He started pointing at me, and then he pointed into town, and then he pointed back at me, and then he made a rifle gesture. And then he pointed back at me, and then he ran his thumb across his throat, and he pointed at me again. You know, he was basically telling me that if we go into town, we were all going to die. And I was just like, wow, this kid's 8 years old, and he's telling me already that I'm going to die. These kids already know what fighting is, what war is and stuff, and here I am, this naive 18-year-old. I'm a Marine, but I hadn't experienced war or anything yet. We got the order to keep going into Najaf, and I remember laying down behind the curb of this street, and I was looking out in this field because it was just a bunch of dirt, and I can remember just these little puffs of smoke coming up, or little puffs of dirt coming up. I thought, how peculiar, that's so weird, what is going on over there? You know, and I looked over to my side, and I said, hey, do you see this? What's going on with all this little dirt puffs? My team leader was just like, oh, man, those are bullets, dude. You know, like, what do you think they are? I'm like, oh. And I remember distinctly laughing and telling some of my buddies to watch my hand because it was shaking uncontrollably. I couldn't stop it from shaking. There was just so much adrenaline, and I was just so scared. Even though I hadn't been engaged and I wasn't shooting back at anyone or anything, the threat was there. The idea that somebody was trying to kill you was actually all the more real. Yeah, it wasn't training anymore. We were actually doing it for our work. It was what we were paid to do. It was what we were trained to do. And now we were actually doing it. And so they drove a couple of the M1A1 Abram tanks through these huge walls that were surrounding the cemetery because that's where they figured out that these guys were at. And so this cemetery is 3 miles by 5 miles long. And so we ended up going through these big, huge holes that these tanks had crashed through the wall so we could get into the cemetery and start clearing it out. And the cemetery was so big that you couldn't even see the guy to your left or to your right. You were kind of all alone. It was really, really scary. And they bury their dead on top of each other. And there's so many graves there that you would have to crawl over the graves to go forward. And so my friend and I, we were sitting behind these two graves, and we were getting shot at. We didn't know where the fire was coming from, who was shooting at us, and stuff like that. And so I was sitting with my back against one grave, and he had his back against another grave. And we both ended up looking out in the same direction between these two graves to see if we could see anything. And probably the loudest snap I've ever heard in my life. It was like someone would take 2x4s, and they were so elastic that they would whip them together. And if you can imagine those two boards colliding, and then at the very end with the snap, that loud crack, that's what happened. Somebody had seen my friend and I and taken a shot at us, and that bullet had passed right between both of our heads. And there's a big bullet hole, you know, right between both of our heads in this grave right behind us. And we both fell backwards, and we were sitting there, and we were just like, whoa, you know? I mean, you know, you kind of have to take a humorous approach to it because it's scary, and it scared us to death. And so, you know, we were both sitting there laughing, you know? And I mean, that's probably not the best thing to do, but what else can you do?
Jason Williams is an Iraq war veteran from Lander. This piece was produced by Wyoming Public Radio's Cordelia Zars. And that's it for this edition of Wyoming Stories. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Willow Belden produced the podcast, and Anna Rader is our web editor. You can find each of the stories you heard today and many others online at wyomingpublicmedia.org. And if you have a story you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. Information about recording your story is available on our website. Wyoming Stories is a production of Wyoming Public Media.